This is track two, and you're listening to the Coos Strange Arithmetic, a song that Yanira used to open up her class. Instead of maintaining an unjust status quo, making students into victims, the coup calls on teachers to tell us how to flip this system. Using swords, prison bars, and pistol grips. English is the art of bombing towns while assuring that you really only bless the ground. In this track, we use our experiences teaching with hip-hop to theorize about the place of hip-hop as content and or theory in a composition classroom. Yanira opens with questions that give the track its title, Did We Move a Bit? In other words, did teaching with these sounds make space for our students to understand such political music as credible content in the writing classroom? Michael jumps in with a yes, talking about the surprise many students have when they encounter hip-hop in a political vein, or even re-listen to mainstream hip-hop using an Afrocentric rhetorical lens. This leads me to reflect about the importance of how we frame hip-hop as a text in the class, and leads to a discussion about how we engage the different levels of listening that students will often bring into the classroom. Economics is a symphony of hunger and theft. Mortar shells often echo after cashing checks. In geography classes, borders, mountains, and rivers, but they will never show the line between the takers and givers. Algebra is that unique occasion in which a school can say that there should be a balanced equation. And then statistics is the tool of the complicit to say everybody's with it. And you're the only critic, and I'm teacher. My hands up, please don't make me a victim. Tell us how to flip this system. Teach my hands up. Please don't make me a victim. Teach, stand up. Tell us how to flip this system.
Do you, and I'll put this to all of you, did teaching with sound, and particularly like teaching with To Pimp a Butterfly, with hip-hop, you know, Michael, the songs you picked, the Lauryn Hill, which I was, that's excellent. I played some Lauryn Hill in my classroom as well. Do you feel that in terms of the outcome of the course, did that create more of a space for this kind of material or this kind of content to keep being taught in the classroom in terms of the reception? Like, did we move a little bit? Any of you feel like we moved a little bit where people, that you had students feeling like, oh, okay, I could see another class like this happening with this kind of content?
Well, for sure. Yeah. And I think, like, I mean, the mainstream orientation to hip-hop music in particular is all through the commercial vein, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no ready access to hip-hop that's engaging in any kind of political work unless you know where to go. If you're not looking for it, you're not going to find it. Mm-hmm. And that's intentionally so. So, like, they're, surprised, you know, that there's this orientation, that there's another space for content and another space for political identifications and resistance that exist within that form that they don't get if they're only listening to, you know, I don't want to name names, but commercial radio.
Right.
And so then what happens, and so that's interesting. So I mentioned the Childish Gambino one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then what, this kid loves Donald Glover and is listening to Childish Gambino, but he's listening to it from a Eurocentric orientation. He's listening to it from a commercial perspective. He goes back and reads it through, you know, through the Kawaita perspective, and is saying, oh, wait a minute, there's something else that's going on. Right, so he's starting to see that there's actual the theoretical lens as changes, and therefore even the text itself then takes on different meaning, and he can see that there's some political efficacy even in this stuff that may be deemed as commercial at first glance. Right, so it's, I think if but that's just a matter of the kid. I mean, it could be my delivery, it could be the way I present it that makes them receptive to it, but. The whole thing that, like, we have these particular rhetorical traditions that we're beholden to that emanate out of this Eurocentric trajectory, right? For better or for worse, as not arbitrary but political, and also other than the fact that there's a power play at work. There's really no good reason that this stuff is what's on the plate most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. Right. It just so happens to be that's the stuff that got picked up and got carried on. So they start to see that, okay, wait a minute. There are other rhetorical traditions that have other values and that have other priorities that then facilitate a completely different understanding of the text. And so I don't even think it matters necessarily that it's African to them sometimes, just that it's different and they understand that there are implications to the theoretical perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. Does it make them, and if it winds up making them more perspective to black culture and to hip hop in particular, then that's cool too. Mm-hmm. But that they start to, you know, that they definitely recognize that there's always going to be something political with the language practices and even the way we start to understand them or we interpret them or the theory that we use too, then that's productive as well, I think.
That's one of the things, Michael, I really appreciate about your assignment was how clearly you lay out African rhetorical practice, and so they have to go through and look. Their analysis is guided in this way.
Yeah.
And I was thinking a little bit about Tim's assignment, where it seems to be about, and you could talk more about it, using To Pimp a Butterfly as theory, like as a text that's on the same level as any other text that we would use in the classroom. And then I was thinking about when I had framed in my class was around political rhetoric, using To Pimp a Butterfly for a Week as one of the texts that we were looking at as a piece of disruptive political rhetoric. But I had students, some white students in the class, that, like, one, for example, was always running, she said, to Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly. That was like her running album, you know. And you know, what I could kind of read from her politically was that I don't think that she was really in line either politically or culturally with To Pimp a Butterfly, but it was like different than a text that you would read, right? When you're reading a text, it's like if you don't agree with the message of it, then you just drop it, right? But if you're listening to something that has lyrics and sound, you can be into it without being into the message or even knowing what the message of it is. And so then that I had some students that were kind of like into the music, but weren't really clued into what the message of the music was. Mm-hmm. But then putting the frame of like, we're going to look at disruptive political practice. And so then they had to read these songs in a different way. And so for some students, they were reading songs that they already liked in this one way, but didn't understand in this other way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking about that. Yeah. Part of what I'm thinking about is the power of how do you frame the use of hip hop or of sound music as text in your classroom, mm-hmm. and how that determines what you know what students end up getting out of it in a way that's going to be different than a text that they'll read.
Yeah, you make me think too of the distinction between consuming it and actually, like, listening as a critical mm-hmm. practice, right? The student you described is really just engaged in an act of consumption. So she's hearing it, but she's not listening mm-hmm. to it. And I think that's a practice for a lot of the music, especially hip hop, right? Like, you talk about divesting from, like, there's a particular emotional or pathetic response to it. But the critical engagement is not there in terms of actually listening to, like, God forbid if they listen to the lyrics of some of this shit, and then it wouldn't be, like, the industry would shut down, you know, like mainstream radio would totally shut down if people really listened to the words. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would like to think that that's the case. Like, it's just a matter of how the listeners are engaging or how they're positioning. There's no agency in the act of listening. There's a passivity and a consumption, which gets to the point of capitalism, right? Like, there's a consumerist capitalist attitude in terms of the way they drink up or imbibe or consume the music, as opposed to it always already be positioned as in the cipher.
Yeah.
So that they, as listeners, also a critic and positioned to respond to it actively, right?
Yeah. What can I make with this? How do I respond?
Right.
I'm called to respond.